So let's start just big picture with your vision new in this post. You obviously came with some political acumen, having been the lieutenant governor with Doug Burgum for a good run, then end up as interim president at BSC, and then voila, you're now the commissioner of the North Dakota University System. What's the blueprint? What's it look like?
Well, we have a lot of great things going on in higher education with 45,000 plus students, you know, and you know, over 10,000 employees. It's a large enterprise. It's over, you know, $4.5 billion of budgets if you add them all up. It's a $800 million plus of general fund. So it's one of the larger items in the state budget. People ask me, why do we fund public higher education? Don't you get enough out of those students from tuition? Well, the answer is look at what you have to pay for private college tuition compared to public. And that should be the answer, but it's not that easy. So we have a job to do of explaining constantly what we do, what we should do best, if we, you know, what the goals are. What I'm bringing is transparency and accountability. Let's have relationships with the legislature, with governor's office, with the industry stakeholders that are concerned, that are hiring our graduates. Let's make sure we're doing what's best for the students, for the parents. You know, what are our institutions offering as far as those hard to hire professions in the state? And we need to be viewed as that not only of educating our students, but providing that needed workforce for the state, and being responsive to the workforce challenges. As you know, we have a lot of open jobs. We have a lot of work to do there. So the job's never done, but that's what we're focusing on.
So let's start on tuition. When you talk about that and the contribution from the state side, is there rough numbers, a percentage of tuition that is covered by, you know, the cost? Explain the difference. You mentioned the private public sector. Obviously, there's a subsidy there. What how much is subsidized based versus the revenue that comes into the schools?
So the smaller institutions, you'll if you hear them talking amongst themselves at legislative hearings, you might hear, well, they're more general funded, we're more tuition funded. So when you see the R1 institutions, by the R1s, I mean UND and NDSU have that research classification of an R1 in public institution. They're more of a one quarter would be general fund, whereas the smaller institutions are half and half, basically in rough numbers of general fund contribution based on their credits that are produced compared to the tuition that's brought in. So roughly 50-50. So rough numbers, half the price of tuition of what it would be if it had to be private only.
And talk a little bit about tuition in the current environment in higher ed. I mean, for a time there, we were saying, whoa, those increases are, you know, something. Obviously, student loan debt is up. Is that leveled off a little bit? What kind of increases are you seeing in tuition? And what does the legislator want of you and the university system in that regard?
We were under a tuition freeze, and so this last biennium, we're allowed to increase tuition again. And so most of the campuses did, caught up and did a 3% and a 3% for the biennium. And that's after a tuition freeze. And we do a lot of comparing through our different consortiums of states of how our tuition comes in compared to other states. And our four-year tuition is very similar. Our two-year tuition is a little higher in some cases. You see property tax subsidy, et cetera, in other states that we don't have here. But one thing that's striking is our out-of-state tuition is in South Dakota and North Dakota is pretty low compared to other states. You'll see a huge differential in in-state versus out-of-state in some of those other state institutions. But with such small population and out-of-state students being a big component of our system, roughly the same amount of out-of-state as in-state in our system, we don't have as big of a differentiation between in-state and out-of-state tuition. Our in-state tuition is very similar to other surrounding states.
So we're competitive. I mean, you know, and I know there was some concern over Minnesota getting pretty aggressive to recruit students and doing some things there. And there was concern that we were going to be bleeding more numbers over to Minnesota, given what they plussed up over there, because I guess they have an unlimited budget, right? Just deficit spend over there in Minnesota as much as possible. How has that worked out?
Well, we actually had more Minnesota freshmen than the year before, where it's a pretty significant number at the institutions along the eastern part of the state. In fact, some of them have a larger number of Minnesota freshmen than North Dakota freshmen, and that makes sense when you're on the border, your out-of-state tuition is not out of line, and there's five times more students potential on the other side of the river, and so it's very common if you're in a situation like that where your institution's on the border of the state. But it has not been the effect that was feared. The Minnesota Promise was there was a lot of fear that this was going to be free education for Minnesotans and they'll stay on their side of the boundary. But the, it actually turned into where it's below certain income levels, and there's already a lot of federal assistance below those income levels, and so it didn't make out to be the disaster that was feared.
I do have a question that came from a listener related to admin salaries and six-figure administrative salaries. Is there a way to pare down the number of those positions in the university system so tuition rates can start to be lowered for incoming students is the question, Brent.
Yeah, good question. That's always a topic, especially when you get into E&E, Division of Appropriations from the House and the Senate. And they like to look at those trends of admin positions versus faculty positions. And sometimes people are surprised to find out the level of pay of some of these jobs. And basically, it's because they're on a national scale. And there's a lot of fluid movement between executive positions within higher ed. So it's like one market that's within regions of the different states. It's not purely one institution or not. So some of those salaries might be higher when you're looking at a national scale salary, but the number of positions themselves, there is some concern that there's more non-instructional employees versus instructional employees that have been growing over the last 15 years. And that's always something that we need to be looking at dialing in. And as the budgetary conversations come up, I mean, the conversation, if there's less funding, is, you know, how many instructors do you need to keep carrying out the course load that you need to instruct? And then, you know, those administrative positions that were added, all of them were added for a reason, to provide a function, to cover something that's not being done, that the president can't get done on their own, whatever may have you, you know, how many of those positions are necessary in a declining expense environment. And so a few of our campuses have had some declining enrollment, and that's what they have to do, is look at every position, look at every program. Is it worth keeping, or is it something that we can find some cost savings here? So it's a constant conversation, but it's a good question.